after some time of taking a break from our internet broadcasting, we have now revitalized the system, and so we're broadcasting live on Pal Talk to all the devotees and interested listeners around the world, so they can also be a part of the lecture and
Hare Krishna, Hare Om.
They can give live questions and answers and participate in the classes.
So welcome all the listeners and students of Bhagavad Gita out there in the world. Actually, I was thinking as we were reading this that I would like to have thousands of participants in this class every night in America and all over the world. Is that a good desire? That they would be hearing Bhagavad Gita, they could every night they could come and hear Bhagavad Gita and study Bhagavad Gita as Srila Prabhupada desired from the Rupanuga Vedic College as part of the... This is the first degree awarding college seminary in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So it's fitting that it should be broadcasting the glories of Lord Krishna's words all over the world. So I'm very happy, and I thank Arya Siddhanta Prabhu and others. I think Srini, what was that? Srinath. Srinath was also instrumental, and Maharshi helped. So this is a very good evening, and we hope that it never stops. We hope the broadcast keep going continuously, perpetually. Okay, so I'll go back to text 1. Chapter 2, text 1.
Translation. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana, Krishna, spoke the following words. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self.
Now we see Arjuna was depressed. The nature of the material world is depressing. If one thinks about it from the point of view of the material world, the material viewpoint, it's very depressing because it always ends up a disaster. It's like if you go to some kind of a drama. If you go to a drama or a theater performance, there's comedies or tragedy. Comedy is something that ends up positive in a good way. In a tragedy, it ends up unfortunate. So, if we consider every one of our lives, they all end up tragedy. Everyone's life becomes tragic because ultimately there's death. And in the material point of view, He has to take birth again in the material world. That's another tragedy beginning, because another chapter of suffering. Therefore, Arjuna, he could see that whether I win or lose, it's a lose-lose situation. He said that. I don't know. We don't know better. We don't know whether it's better to win or to lose. How did he put it? Very nicely, Krishna. Arjuna put it. Nor do we know which is better. Which verse is that? Text 6. Look at text 6. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. Now you can just imagine what kind of a dilemma he's in. He's on the battlefield, he's about to fight, and he doesn't know whether it's better to win or lose. This is a very difficult circumstance, but he's a thoughtful person. Arjuna is the archetype thoughtful person. He's really trying to do the right thing. He wants to be a good man. He's not just going through without considering others' feelings or what's right. No, he wants to do the right thing. And there are many people like this in the world. There are many people who genuinely would like to do the right thing. But they don't have Lord Krishna as their chariot driver. Therefore, what can they do? When they get in distress, they go to some charlatan, psychic, or some fortune teller, or they don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. Psychologists, psychiatrists, who are in ignorance themselves. Where do the psychiatrists go? Who do they turn to? So, the solution is that Arjuna was depressed, distressed, but he was fortunate that he had the dearmost friend. That dearmost friend, Lord Krishna, was seated on his chariot. And he took the good opportunity to inquire from Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna, please explain what I should do, what direction I should go. So everyone's in the same situation, and everyone should accept Krishna as the spiritual master and the dearmost friend. Then everyone will be saved from going in the wrong direction. Someone may say, what difference does it make what I do? Doesn't matter. There's a statement by Charvak Muni. He says, beg, borrow, or steal, but get ghee. Because Charvak Muni is an atheist, and because he says, after death, the body is burnt into ashes, and who's going to come and give you some reactions? Don't worry about any reactions. When the body's turned into ashes, there's no reactions. So this is the philosophy of Charvak Muni. The atheistic philosophy. But no, that is not correct. There's many faults in that philosophy. The first fault is that he doesn't recognize that the living entity lives eternally. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Majayate mriyate va kadachin mayam bhutta bhavita va nabuyaha ajo nitya shashvatoyam purana nahanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul is neither born nor dies, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be. He's unborn, undying, primeval, and he's not slain when the body is slain. This is Bhagavad Gita philosophy. The soul has no beginning. There is a misconception amongst many that the soul begins when this body begins. Some people actually say that. Even religious, so-called religious persons, they say that the soul begins with the beginning of this body. If you ask them, where were we before? They say, no, we didn't exist before. They say that. They say, we didn't exist before this life. Well, that's incorrect. The soul has always existed. Nityo nityana, chetanas chetanana. Eternal means there was never a time when it didn't exist, nor will there ever be a time when it doesn't exist. This is confirmed. Now we're going to read this, the verse that confirms that tomorrow night. So tune in again. But anyway, Krishna confirms it. The soul has no beginning, has no end. It's always existing. Think about that. You've always existed. So you may say, I've always existed. Well, I don't remember anything. I don't remember living previous to this life. So therefore we doubt it. I doubt whether I've existed forever because I forgot everything. Some people say, therefore, it's not a good proof because there's no remembrance of previous lives. They say, I don't believe I lived before because I cannot remember. But then, we ask the question, do you believe that you were living when you were in your mother's womb? You want the answer for them? Yes. Right, you believe you were living when you were in your mother's womb. Were you living in your mother's womb the first week after pregnancy? Yes. Do you know what your body looked like at that time? Yes. What did it look like? A small lump. Yes, just a little teeny lump of some, I guess you'd call it flesh of some sort. Some kind of. What about 1 hour after pregnancy began? Were you existing in your mother's womb? Yes. At that time, the body was like a little small pea, combination of the secretion of the male and female. Do you remember what it was like when you're in that body after 1 hour after pregnancy? No. Well, you're sure you were there, but you cannot remember. That means that we forget. As the body changes, we forget. You don't remember, in fact, most of the events that took place while you were in your mother's womb, correct?
In fact, I don't remember a single event that took place.
Not even one. He cannot remember one incident that took place during that whole 9 month period. 9 months, that's 9 times 30, 270 days, times 24 hours. Much of that? Thousands of hours. He cannot remember even one incident. How many seconds? So many incidents took place. Can't remember. So, the point is, we forget. As the body changes, we forget. And when it changes more, we forget more. Just like I can remember yesterday's activities, some of them, not all, but some. But if you ask me to remember a week ago, I remember less because my body changed more. If you ask me to remember 2 years ago, less. And if you ask me to remember my previous life, I can't remember anything. Just like I can't even remember anything when I was in my mother's womb. So that's not a good argument that just because I don't remember something, it means that I wasn't there, I didn't exist. Question here.
People may say that in the womb, you know, you naturally, you're in a pretty, you haven't really learned how to speak anyway. So, but even after you're out, when you're out of the womb, I don't remember practically most of the things I've done most of my life.
No.
Let alone my first 5 years, when I was, I don't remember crawling around.
So here's a very honest person who's admitting that he remembers practically nothing of the first 5 years that he was out of the womb.
Most of my life.
Most of his life he forgot.
Most of my life, I don't remember the details, what I said, who I was with, what time, when.
So that's the point I'm making, is that simply because we've forgotten doesn't prove that we weren't there or that we didn't exist. It's like a person who has amnesia. And he gets hit on the head very strongly. His memory is blocked. He can't remember. So we're like that. We've forgotten everything. We don't know how we got in this world. We don't know who we are, what we're supposed to do, who our family is. So therefore, Krishna consciousness is the process of reviving the amnesia, bringing us back into the remembrance of our relationship with the spiritual world, with Krishna, etc. Okay? Next text.
Text 2, translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy." Purport. Krishna and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate in the absolute truth. Absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman, or the impersonal all-pervasive spirit, Paramatma, or the localized aspect of the supreme within the heart of all living entities, and Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, this conception of the absolute truth is explained thus. Vedanti tat tattva vidas tatvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the absolute truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the absolute truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which also has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun's surface, and the sun planet itself. One who studies the sunshine only is a preliminary student. One who understands the sun's surface is further advanced. And one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest.
Does everyone understand this analogy? How it relates? Yes. The idea is that the sun has three features. There's the sunshine, that's one feature. Then there's the sun planet, that's the second feature, or the surface, and then the sun planet itself. Sometimes it's described as the sun, the demigod in charge of the sun. But anyway, here we'll use these three. Sunshine, the surface of the sun, and then the sun planet itself. And the absolute truth is also described in three features: Brahman, which is the effulgence of the Lord; Paramatma, which is the localized aspect, supersoul, in the heart of every living entity; and ultimately Bhagavan, Krishna, who is the supreme controller and who has his own planet in the spiritual world. And these are the three features. They're still one. They're one and different simultaneously. If you ask people, what is God, you'll get many different answers. And many of the answers will be in these categories. Someone may say, God is everything. That's not untrue. That is true. And someone may say, God is light. That's also true. Someone may say, God is the Holy Ghost. He's in the heart of everyone. That's also true. Someone may say, God is Krishna, plays a flute. That's also true. So, to understand the complete conception of God, this verse is very important. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajganam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. If you learn this verse and understand it, you'll have the supreme understanding of the absolute truth, greater than any philosopher, Western or Eastern. It's all there in this verse. Any questions? Yeah. Continue.
Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness, and the glaring effulgence of its impersonal nature may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the absolute truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal features of the supreme absolute truth. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth, are the topmost transcendentalists, although all students who are engaged in the study of the absolute truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sun shine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another, and yet the students of the three different phases are not in the same category.
We could give another example, which is similar. Let's say there's a very famous artist, and you see his painting. So by seeing his painting, it's in a sense you're seeing the artist also. In one sense, it's true. Like they say, yeah, I have a Picasso in my home. I have a Van Gogh in my home. Okay. Now, see, so having the painting is one way of associating with the person. But let's say you can go to his home. You actually are able to go and stay in his home, where he's personally present. You're in the house. So that's closer, you're getting closer to him. There's a certain ambience that you'll get from being. You'll get some ambience from his painting, but you'll get more from being in his home. But then when he actually comes out and you see him, and you speak with him and talk with him, then you get even more. You get the more personal aspect. So which is more important? The person, the artist, or the artwork? The artist is more important. The artist, because he can produce more. And yeah, he's more valuable. So similarly, which is more important? God's energy or the person God himself? The energy of God is also important, and it's God in one sense, but not in the full sense, complete. The energetic is the source of energy. So God is the source of light, of love, of heat, of time, everything. All the energies come from Him. Earth, water, fire. Even the other spirit living entities. He's the source.
You were talking about the Lord in the heart, the Holy Ghost, and His Paramatma. And I'm a little confused about you're saying Bhagavan and Paramatma, that Paramatma is energy or an expansion of the person.
Yes.
That God is the person.
Brahman is the energy. Brahman is the Shakti, the energy. But Paramatma is the localized expansion of the Lord, a super soul in the heart. Every living entity, including ourselves, has an expansion, a localized form of God in the heart. It's quite amazing when you think about it. That's why sometimes they say you never walk alone. That's true. You never walk alone because God's in your heart. I remember as a child, was it Jiminy Cricket? He used to say, let your conscience be your guide. So the conscience is, what does it mean? It means super soul, really. Let your conscience. So what is that conscience? What is that innate, that intuition, that divine guidance, that conscience, that super soul? In fact, we can see even the effect of super soul in that living entities have a thing called, what is it that they're born with? Intuition. What's another word for it?
Instinct.
Instinct, yes. So what is that instinct? That instinct is coming from super soul within the heart. The modern world cannot really give a satisfactory definition or explanation of instinct. They say it's something inexplicable, that one is instinctive. For example, how is it that a baby, human, immediately begins looking for a mother's breast, or even without eyes, searching for a mother's breast, and immediately knows to suck? That's where food. Now, why would that happen? Why would that be the way of obtaining food? There are many, many species, 8,400,000 species. And most of them do not acquire their food by sucking when they're first born. There's many other ways to acquire food than to search around for some breast to suck. Well, why is it? And we see the little birds, we don't see them searching around for some breast to suck. Have you ever seen a bird do that? Huh? No. Bird never tries to find a breast. What does a baby bird do? Just opens its mouth. Keeps the mouth open. Instinctively it knows that the mother is going to put some food in there. But this instinct is actually coming from super soul. Okay? Yes? Question.
So there's the instinct, and you say it's coming from super soul, but we also consider the material conditioning, like sex attraction and sex desire. Automatically, we don't have to continuously make sure we know how to procreate. We just automatically the species can reproduce because they're forced to be attracted in sex desire. So one may say that the sex desire is also coming from the super soul, and it's also this instinct. So why is it different than...
No, it's the same. Same idea. This is coming from the super soul. He's reminding. It is said, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesha janatishtati pramayan sarva bhutanam yantra rudhani maya.
Krishna says, I'm situated in everyone's heart as super soul, and I'm guiding the living entity who is seated as on the machine made of material energy. I'm directing the wanderings. So whatever he does, he's being directed. He can't do anything. He can't even remember what to do or how to do anything without the super soul's help. Question back then.
Many times we can see that many people have a realization of the impersonal Brahman. But have the realization of impersonal Brahman, of Brahman.
They have realization?
Yes, of Brahman. As he said that Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. But they don't believe that this is some higher realization, that this... They think that it is the ultimate realization.
That's the highest, yes.
And how they can be come to the understand?
Yes, that is. How can the impersonalists who think that the energy is the highest? There's a nice verse Lord Chaitanya quoted. Atma ramas chamunayo niganta apyarukrame kravanti haitukin bhakti mitam dipagunari. He described that even the impersonalists, they can become attracted to Krishna, especially if they get the association of the devotees of the Lord. Because Krishna is all attractive. He's more attractive than simply the bright light or the merging. One of my godbrothers gave a nice analogy, or a nice example, which I'll repeat. He said that the Buddhism, or we could say also this impersonal Brahman, is like going from negative numbers up to zero. So that's good. There's some advancement there. The Krishna consciousness is going from zero into the positive numbers. So obviously zero is better than negative. The material world is negative. Everywhere you go, there's death, there's suffering, there's illusion, depression. So yes, it's better to have zero, to get rid of the negative numbers. That's going up. But better than that is going into the positive numbers, and that is going to the spiritual world, associating with Krishna in his spiritual planet, with his spiritual associates. Okay? So in other words, they just need to come in contact with Krishna and they can get a higher taste if they're a little bit, shall we say, willing to hear submissively. Sometimes they don't want to hear, so what can you do? Thakur?
You just gave the analogy of the Brahman being the negative numbers going to zero, and the Krishna consciousness. Where does the Paramatma fit in there? Could you put it into that? It may not fit. It doesn't always. Not everything fits into an analogy, but
no. Paramatma is also Krishna. So worshipping Paramatma through the yoga practice, Ashtanga yoga practice, brings one to the point of entering Vaikuntha. That's also the same. That's also positive numbers, according to one's particular inclination. There are some who, many, many souls, who are completely satisfied to live in Vaikuntha with Narayan. Completely satisfied, Lakshmi Narayan. Right? There are many who worship Lakshmi Narayan or Sitaram. They're completely happy in this mood of worshiping the Lord in great opulence. It's very attractive. Wouldn't you like to live in a place that was so opulent, full of jewels and opulent food and opulent everything? Yes, it's very nice. But there are some devotees who would prefer, even in place of that opulence, they'd like to live in Vrindavan, just in some forest. Not some forest, I mean Vrindavan, a special place, but that is another mood of devotion. So that is for those who want to live in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna Loka.
Bhagavan and Paramahansa Brahmaiti Shabdate means for retail and give Bhagavad Gita is explaining.
I couldn't get the first part.
I'm telling about the Bhagavan staying in their heart and Paramahansa Brahmaiti Shabdate anyway, he's staying, he controls all living entities. So that's why we are some mistake means bhul, pramad, vipravisha coming in your mind and why means that means we are doing something and then it is our mistake and the God is staying in the heart, why not he guide me? Why coming our mind everything means bhul, pramad, vipravisha, karna pataho and mistake, big mistake, everything. Why not Paramatma guide me? He living entities, all of our entities, and he guide all of our entities, living entities is guiding.
He's guiding all the living entities,
yes.
Paramatma.
Yes.
So why doesn't he guide me?
Yes. Why does not guide me? Why am I mistake?
Why do I make mistakes?
So many mistakes I have heard, that forgetting.
I'm forgetting.
Maybe.
Why? Yes, because we don't hear him. Yeah, that's our. He's speaking, he's giving us good advice. The example in the Upanishads is there are two birds seated on the tree. One bird is eating the fruits, the other bird is the witness. And the witnessing bird is waiting for the fruit-eating bird to again turn back to him. They're friends. So Paramatma is waiting for us to hear from him. To turn back, then we won't make mistakes anymore. A pure devotee of the Lord, he doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't forget anything because Krishna gives him all the intelligence, all the remembrance, but because he likes to hear from the Lord. It's like if you're speaking to someone and they're telling you which way to go. They say, okay, now turn here. Okay, now at that light, turn left. And as long as you listen, you can get good directions. But if you hang up, no more directions. Shishi Gaurani Thai Ki Jai, Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.